Blog Talk Radio. Hi everyone, welcome back again to our spotlight session prior to our Voices from the Field. That's almost a month, less than a month again. We're looking forward to it. And today we are streaming live from Fairfax, Virginia, from a normally low temperature in Fairfax, and the School of Education is here again. So thank you so much for joining us today, and we are looking forward to have a short preview of the our Voice from the Field series, which will be scheduled in less than a month, as I already, for February 1st, 2017, here at Virginia International University, 3:30 to 4:30. So we are very excited today to talk briefly to our speaker, Dr. Heather Weaver, to give us a brief brief summary of what she's planning to talk about when she will she be here on February 1st. So hopefully she's able to call in. And while we are waiting, I would like to welcome you to leave your messages on here in our blogtalk radio.com School of Education messaging, or you can always tweet us, or feel free to check out our Facebook and leave your comments there while we are discussing here with Dr. Weaver. So again, we are planning to have our Voice from the Field series February 1st, 2017, and it's the first one of this year, and we're very excited about it. You can always check out our previous shows at viu.edu/SED, Voice from the Field series, on our website. And while we are going to have our Voice from the Field here at Virginia University, you can always register prior and attend us virtually if you're not able to visit us here. So let's see. Hello? Hello? I'm trying to see if Dr. Weaver is here. Hello?
Hello, Victoria. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, perfect. Hi, I can hear you very well. Thank you so much for calling. So we are live. Thank you so much for calling. And Dr. Weaver, if you don't mind, I'm going to introduce you briefly, and then you can tell us a little bit more about yourself, and including how the topic of your talk is important to you. So,
okay, great.
Thank you. Dr. Heather Weaver has been in the English language field since 1999. She holds a PhD in applied linguistics from Georgetown University, as well as two Masters of Arts degrees, one in teaching in TESOL and bilingual education from Georgetown University, and another one in adult and higher education from University of Oklahoma. She has been teaching full-time at Georgetown since 2007 and is currently an associate teaching professor in the English language program housed in the Center for Language Education and Development, CLED. She has presented on numerous topics and invited workshops and lectures, as well as international, national, and regional TESOL and linguistics conferences. The author of multiple articles, Dr. Weaver's research focuses on effective teaching strategies, as well as the social and constructive nature of language learning, language teaching. And again, we're very excited to have you here with us on February 1st, 2017. Again, thank you so much for being here. And thank you again
for
your time. Today.
Just to note, it's 2018, though, not 2017.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for coming. I'm second behind time. I think the weather slows me down here in Fairfax.
Exactly. I think it does for us all.
Yes, thanks indeed. So, yes, please tell us a little bit about yourself, and including how the topic of your talk is important to you.
Sure. Well, as you just mentioned, I've been in the English language field for approximately 17 years. I did start out teaching English overseas in Germany before I moved to D.C., where I did my doctoral work in applied linguistics at Georgetown University. And Though I've taught courses elsewhere, I've predominantly been an associate teaching professor in the English Language Center at Georgetown. And the majority of my students are international students, and they're learning English with the goal of preparing themselves to enter U.S. universities for undergraduate and graduate programs.
Right.
Now, the short explanation about the importance of this topic for me is that I have a love-hate relationship to the domain of assessment and an interest in exploring the tension between its pros and cons. Assessment, depending on how it is defined, occurs continually when engaging with learners. But for the sake of the time, the episode of Voices from the Field that I will be speaking at will limit its focus to discussing the grading mechanisms of formal assessment measures, such as grading essays and presentations. And
right.
while I believe that well-planned assessment facilitates learning, hence that's the reason I love it, creating and enacting a well-planned assessment is really often daunting and unpleasant for both students and teachers, and that's why I hate it. So more specifically for this particular talk, the inspiration was born out of a tension I began to notice early on in my teaching career. Sometimes a student could talk fluently for 15 minutes but say nothing worth listening to, and another student might have interesting insights to share but poor delivery skills. So I found myself struggling to decide how I could codify these realities and honor the strengths that each student had while also drawing their attention to their areas for growth. And a good grading tool will differentiate high and low performing students. And I needed to find or develop such a tool.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you so much. What is a rubric? And just for those who are maybe still trying to figure out their own rubrics and maybe devise in the field. So what are some of the defining features of this sort of assessment tool, please?
Okay. Well, a rubric is one type of tool for grading assignments. So this means a rubric is not in and of itself the assessment instrument, but rather a rubric is a part of a larger assessment cycle that includes not only the rubric, remember that means it's the mechanism for grading, but it also includes the assessment task or an event such as a student essay. So in our current national and international educational landscapes, rubrics have become a defining mechanism for making explicit what was once a seemingly arbitrary connection between student performance and student grade. So the defining features of a rubric, there are two defining features of a rubric, the categories of the rubric and then the descriptors. And so in the talk that I'll be giving, we'll take a look at several examples that will help demonstrate these two features, the categories and the descriptors.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you so much. And are there certain types of assignments that tend to be better suited to the use of rubrics than others? Or can you create a rubric for just anything, about anything?
Well, you actually can create a rubric for any activity that you have the ability to divide into parts. Having said that, it is likely more trouble than it is worth for a traditional assessment format like a multiple choice test. So rubrics are mostly used for evaluating a range of written products like essays or discussion board posts, or speaking events like presentations or interactive conversations, or even blended formats like poster sessions that have both speaking and written components.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And in regard to the students, in your experience, how do students tend to react to the use of rubrics? What do they value about them, and how much of learning curve is involved in making effective use of feedback they provide?
It's a really good question, because frankly, depending on the details that are contained in the rubric, the learning curve for students can be very high. And for some students, a rubric is too detailed. These students prefer a simple, holistic grade and aren't as concerned with the finer-grained analysis that a rubric inherently provides. But for others, the rubric is a critical step in their ongoing learning process. So the rubric becomes part of the student's internal dialogue and planning as they plan for a new assessment moment. So as they plan to write a second essay, they use the insights that they gain from the first rubric in moving forward with that second essay. But either way, whether the student likes or dislikes the rubric, students can benefit from multiple exposures to the same or a similar rubric throughout a semester. This principle can even be extended to the use of similar rubrics across different classes if your teaching context allows for teacher collaboration, or if your teaching context is a multi-level or multi-semester program. So repetition and reuse of the same or similar rubrics definitely is one way to mitigate the challenges that are associated with the students learning from a rubric.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Verga. And I would like to ask you a question about your talk and the title of your talk, which begins, which I get a lot, the good, the bad, and the rubric, designing your rubrics effectively. It seems to imply that rubrics have the potential to be either good or bad, neither, both, or something in between. So how can rubrics be good? How can rubrics be bad, if you can clarify a little bit?
This is a fun question, I think. The simple answer is that rubrics have advantages and disadvantages, and it's the way in which they are designed and used that we find the balance between the good and the bad sides. So from the student perspective, a rubric allows one to break down a complex output, such as an essay or a presentation, into its subcomponents and corresponding descriptions. Remember, those are the two defining features of a rubric, the categories and the descriptors, right? So this breakdown into these two areas allows the student to more easily understand the grade and identify in which of the subcomponents there is the greatest need for improvement. This process enhances basically the transparency of grading, and at the same time, it facilitates learner progress. And this is the biggest pro, or this is the good side of a rubric. Now, the bad or negative side for students is that a fully fleshed out rubric can be difficult to parse, as we just discussed. It's especially difficult for lower level students who receive a rubric in a language that is not their native language. So to give you a concrete example, let's say you divide a presentation into three subcomponents, three categories. Category one is organization content, category two is fluency and pronunciation, and category three is grammar and vocabulary. For each of these three categories, there are typically five descriptors. So this results in a rubric that has 15 different explanations, and that can be overwhelming for learners to intake. So the corollary negative for the educator is that quality rubrics, they take time to develop. And while they're theoretically capable of making a subjective process objective, they are still to some degree subjective. Mm-hmm. So in my Voices from the Field talk, I'll share some ways of minimizing this and other challenges for using rubrics and finding that balance between the good side and the bad side.
That's great. Thank you so much. And we all are looking forward to your talk, Dr. Verga. And I'm more than sure that everybody is, we're not going to give out more secrets about your talk first. year, but we're more than sure that there will be lots of people, teachers and students and partners who are even overseas would like to join us on that day, less than a month. And can I just, general question, what is your top takeaway for using or designing rubrics, please?
Oh, sure. The top takeaway. Yes, as you said, we don't want to give away too much. We want you to tune in on February the 1st to hear the full story. But my top takeaway is that designing rubrics is a reiterative process. So do expect to revise your rubric. Also, don't think of rubrics as being objective. The choice of the categories, the choice of the subcomponents of the rubric, as well as the explanations that are contained in the descriptors, are part of a subjective process. So it's precisely because of the inherent subjectivity that it is important to think of rubric design as reiterative, which brings us back to my number one point, do expect to revise your rubric.
Right. That's great. Thank you so much. And last bonus question, just to hear
sure.
the advice from an experienced teacher like you are, has been in the field since, I guess, more than 10 years already, right? If I'm
yes, long time, long time.
Long
working
time.
On 20 years.
Oh, my. So, yes, in general, what is your source of motivation and how do you keep yourself motivated?
Lots of coffee. I take quite seriously, though, the responsibility to help students and to help students achieve progress in their language skills. So that's my area. I thrive on seeing students become empowered. And when a student unlocks some new insight into understanding and or using English, it is very rewarding. Occasionally, these students recognize that I have personally facilitating that awareness, that new knowledge, and they say a simple thank you. And that thank you, while not necessary for my dedication to my field, it is a refreshing reminder that what we do and how we do it matters in the lives of our students. And that helps keep me motivated. That and coffee.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your vigorous brief talk prior to your talk here on February 1st, Dr. Vigor, again. And we're looking forward to see you here again. It's going to be from 3:30 to 4:30 on February 1st. When Dr. Vigor in her practice-oriented session will draw on principles developed in her use of rubrics with English language learners, providing examples from several rubrics for productive tasks, including rubrics for written essays, a traditional oral presentations, and a group-based discussion task. And based on analysis of the samples, she'll identify advantages of rubrics and provide tips on how to avoid potential pitfalls. And what's most exciting is that attendees will receive a handout with all the examples. So looking forward to Dr. Berger. Thank you so much again for your time. And thanks. I know you're extremely busy and really, really value your moment discussing a little bit with us about what exactly you're going to present on February 1st. So thank you again.
I thank you also, Victoria. Thank you very much for having me on the program today, and I look forward to discussing these issues more in February.
Thank you so much. A wonderful day, and stay warm. Thanks again.
You too. You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. So thank you so much again, everybody. That was our presenter, Dr. Heather Rieger, on rubrics. Again, the topic will be the good, the bad, and the rubrics, designing and using rubrics effectively. She's going to be here at Virginia Tech University on February 1st, 3:30 to 4:30. If you are not able to be present, feel free to check us out on YouTube. Live streaming. We're going to live stream the session again. And the way you register is that you have to go to the USCB website, click on Voices from the Field, and register. And this way you can join us virtually, if you're not here. So looking forward again to Dr. Rigas' presentation on this exciting topic, and we thank her again for shedding some light here on her exciting topic that we're all very looking forward to. Thank you so much, everybody, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them. Still time here, 10 more minutes left, but in addition, you can always tweet us or check us out on Facebook. We're always there, and of course, on our blog. Have a wonderful day, everybody, and stay warm. Thank you again, everybody. Have a good day. Bye.